Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Rishi Sunak still faces questions about his own knowledge of Nadeem Zahawi's tax affairs after he moved to sack the Tory chairman yesterday. Promises of thousands more hospital beds and 800 new ambulances are at the centre of a new plan that the government hopes will boost urgent and emergency care after a difficult winter dominated by grim warnings about the severe pressures facing the NHS. Teachers in England and Wales are due to take industrial action this week. Here's Education Secretary Gillian Keegan.
For our teachers to have an impact, they need to be in school. I understand that pressures that most people, all of us, are facing, including our teachers, as we struggle with some of the economic challenges due to the war in Ukraine and the pandemic. Inflation is eating away at all of our paychecks.
And FA Cup holders Liverpool have been beaten 2-1 by Brighton. A last-gasp goal put Brighton through to the next round. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Paul Blundell.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could change things whenever you like? Well, with Sky Mobile, if you need more data, you can make your plan bigger. Or if you want to spend less, you can choose to make your data plan smaller. So, with other bills rising, you have the option to change your data plan to suit you. Sky Mobile. Hello, possible.
Make your plan smaller from the following month. See sky.com/mobile for terms.
Colourful, coming up next, colourful, Delia Delore on Colourful Radio.
Hello, Chico. Come to Einstein. You know I love tracking the energy we use on our smart meter display. Well, now I've found ways to help us save money on our energy bill. Like learning how to lower our combi boiler flow temperature. And shortening our showers to 4 minutes. Exactly. I'll track our energy use on my smart meter display.
For more ways to save money, search Smart Energy Tips. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Désarmé, tête à diplôme où je crois que j'aurais dû faire l'armée. Je garde mes zinc près de moi, que ça qui me fait du bien. Je garde mes zinc près de moi, que ça qui me fait du bien. Trop d'haineux, trop d'envieux, trop de suceurs, je comprends pas. Pourtant je faisais bien, pourtant je faisais bien. Donc sur un coup de tête, j'ai niqué l'ancien manager avec CG1. Mais je parle pas l'anglais. Pour moi c'est chelou, dans la zone tout le monde devient fou. Au fond, je m'en bats les couilles. Au fond, chacun sa route. J'ai voulu faire le bon, mais toi, tu m'as pris pour un con. Donc, je vais te charcler comme un Londres. Je vais te charcler comme un Londres. Ici, la sincérité, ça pue sa mère. Le maïs, je le vois mort. C'est léger, t'inquiète, ton pèse. C'est léger, t'inquiète, ton pèse. Je lui ai foutu un coup de rein, un deuxième coup de rein, je l'ai laissé dans l'hôtel. Mais toi, elle te voit comme un pêcheur. T'es revenu quand elle t'a déjà.
Whether in England or France, we do not. Whether in London or Paris, we do not sit on the fence. I got BBS diamonds on, as I sit in the trench. And I think that's where I'm from, we did have to sleep with. Off head, I don't know my mobile number, but I still know my prison one. How can I forget about that band though, when I basically lived in one? I still can't go to Michigan, even though I made all this bread, this pain. Told little broski, work his aim, don't go to no civilian. When I act like comedians, that's Tui and a ding-dong trying to blend in like chameleons. Make fly in the evening, they want to bring seasoning. She got banned from a ting with a bean and she went sleep on the cheapest ting. Yo, all this time in France, but I still can't speak French. Yo, I told Kobalada to come to London, let's link in ends. It's only right that we live it large, but us living less. Back on that sweatbox, cutting through Inverness.
You see, la sincérité, ça pue sa mère. Le maïs, je le vois mort. C'est léger, t'inquiète, on pèse. C'est léger, t'inquiète, on pèse. Je lui ai foutu un coup de rein, un deuxième coup de rein, je l'ai laissé dans l'hôtel. Mais toi, elle te voit comme un pêcheur. T'es revenu quand elle t'a déjà.
Whether in England or France, we do not. Whether in London or Paris, we do not sit on the fence. I got BBS diamonds on, as I sit in the trench. And I think that's where I'm from, we did have to sleep with.
Whoa! frenzy on the NZ. Smoking Fenty, sipping on some energy. Living up, living up. Living up, living up. Surrounded by fine ladies, dainty babies. Rocking and jigging to songs of all ages. Living up, living up. Girls pull me over, asking me what's up. Living up, living up. Living up, living up. So we rolled along to Wendy's, parked her ride. She and her friends then stepped inside. Living up, living up. Living up, living up. To all of my jiggers and my MCs. Turn on my DVD, you know what I mean. Living up, living up. Living up, living up. To all of my jiggers and my MCs. Fan in the air if you love ladies. If you can't show you want, you are chichi. You're not in my category. But we know what, no chichi man, boy. And if you're power chichi man, you can't stay on ya. We don't want no chichi man, boy. And if you're far with chichi man, you can't stay on ya.
Delia Delore on Colorful Radio. You may not have
Colorful,
Delia Delore on Colorful Radio. Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with me, Delia Delore. If you have not heard the show before, welcome. Get ready to learn with us as we dissect popular mottos, mantras and metaphors. We trace their origins and find how they translate to everyday life. Each week we have a special guest who resonates with their chosen expression. This week's metaphor is a common one,
but to put it into action in terms of discussing true stories that explain it isn't easy, as many people find it difficult to say why they have taken the blame for something that they didn't do. You'd think that it would be easy, right? You think, and you'll see that we are right, and you'll be wrong. Maybe it's a good thing that people don't always remember occasions that explain this. Maybe it means they've moved on. Maybe you've immediately thought of a time that you were a victim of pain for something someone else did. Have you thought of any metaphors that would suit what I've just said? Someone who is happy to share experiences about the mysterious metaphor is today's guest, Tony Kelly. Tony is in demand for radio, television, and webinar interviews about type 2 diabetes. He's also a print editor and featured on several podcasts and runs free workshops in many subjects. So we're very lucky to have him. He has been a guest on Metaphorically Speaking before when he was talking about diabetes. But today we'll be discussing the metaphor, have you guessed it? To carry the can. Have you ever used a figure of speech and wondered how this would translate into another language? In today's episode, we'll look at the German expression etwas ausbaden müssen, which, when you literally translate it from German into English, means having to bathe something out. It means carrying the responsibility for something or someone else's wrongdoing, including but not limited to your own. In English, we would use the phrase to carry the can for something or somebody, or to pay for something, to convey the meaning of this. We will trace back the roots of this metaphor in the German language to understand where this saying comes from and why it differs so much from its English sibling. Let me take you on a journey to Germany. The term etwas ausbaden müssen, to bathe something out, means having to bear the consequences for something that either you or another is responsible for. Until as recent as the early 60s, the concept of bathing was a lot more primitive and functional than what we know today. There was one day a week, usually Saturday, that was for bathing. Therefore, Saturday was also referred to as Badetag, bathing day. Not every household in Germany had their own bathing tub. For those who did, being able to have a warm bath was connected to quite a bit of effort. The water that came from the tap was usually cold, and who in all honesty enjoys a cold bath? So firstly, you had to heat the water to the right temperature using a kettle over an open fire, or since post-World War II, a bath boiler that ran on either wood or coal. The boiling water was then mixed with cold water until the right temperature was reached. This took time, so the same bathing water was usually used for a whole family to wash themselves in. Imagine coming home after a long day at work, eager to jump into a nice warm bath, but instead of that, you find a tub filled with somewhat lukewarm, brownish-looking water that makes you question whether you really want that bath. Now, you probably think whoever had the work of preparing the bath would be the one to jump in first, but that wasn't the case. The order of bathing, as you could call it, was determined by the family hierarchy. This meant that the father, the head of the family, would get to bathe first. Second was the mother, and then the children in order of descending age. The first people to bathe, therefore, could enjoy a nice warm bath. The further down the line you were, the colder and also the dirtier, of course, the bathing water would be. The youngest would not only bathe in rather cold and dirty water, but would also have the pleasure of emptying and cleaning out the bathtub. With the last bit of water left in the tub, he or she would clean out the inside of the tub with a brush. This was called etwas ausbaden, to bathe something out, and was, as you can imagine, rather unpleasant.
Oh, das ist für mich das Schönste am ganzen Tag. Eine Badewanne voll Wasser, voller Schaum und ich mittendrin. Ein Stück Seife und einen Waschlappen und dann runter mit dem Dreck. Aber dann gibt es eben noch etwas, was die Badewanne zum schönsten Platz auf der ganzen Welt macht.
Translation? Oh, this is the most beautiful part of my day. A bath filled with water, lots of foam, and me right in there. A piece of soap, a washcloth, and then off with the dirt. But then there is another thing which makes the bathtub the best place in the world. Households that did not have their own bathing tub would go to a public bathing house called Browserbad. Those were public baths where you could bathe for a small fee. This was more about washing your body than for enjoyment and leisure like nowadays. The first bathing houses were introduced in the 19th century, and England was actually a leader in this. The era of enlightenment brought about a change in people's way of thinking. Cleanliness became a topic of more importance than previously. However, the majority of the population didn't have access to running water or bathing facilities. So the medics at that time fought for the opening of public bathing facilities. In 1842, Liverpool opened the first public bathing house for workers. Soon after, many other such facilities were opened all over England and the rest of Europe. What led to a breakthrough in public acceptance of those newly established bathing houses were the efforts of German dermatologist Oskar Lassar. In 1874, he founded the German Society for Bathing Houses, whose slogan was "A weekly bath for every German." With that, he was mostly referring to shower baths, the predecessor of showers. The defining success in the introduction of Feig's Browsenbad, the public shower baths, was made during a public exhibition for hygiene in 1883. Lassar had set up a Nissen hut with a total of 10 shower stalls for men and women. During the exhibition, anybody could take a shower here for only 10 pennies, which included soap and a towel. The demand was great, and between May and July, over 7,000 people used the facility. Oskar Lassar saw this as a great achievement in public hygiene, as showers were much more sanitary than the public bathtubs, which, even though they would be cleaned after each bath, could still contain infectants. Public baths prevailed until not so long ago. In fact, it wasn't until after World War II that the average citizen had their own bathroom, and even then, it was predominantly the case for newly builds.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath, long about a Saturday night. Yeah, rubbed up, just relaxing in the tub, thinking everything was alright. Well, I stepped out the tub, I put my feet on the floor, I wrapped the towel around me and I opened the door. And in a splish splash, I jumped back in the bath. Well, how was I to know there was a party going on? There was a splishing and a splash, reeling with the feeling, moving and a groove. Rockin' and a rollin', dang yeah!
I'm excited to welcome our guest. British-born Tony Kelly was raised in Jamaica and returned to England in 1979. And he's lived in Birmingham with his family ever since. As a Mikko Teachers College graduate, he taught English and religious education in Kingston High Schools. Tony worked in local and central government for 30 years before early retirement as a middle manager of equity, equality, diversity and inclusion. Tony, thank you very much for being on Metaphorically Speaking once again. When we were faced with this metaphor, it was one that normally our guests decide what they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But our team have always wanted to talk about this metaphor. And my writer as well was saying, you know, I really love to write about this metaphor. We thought, okay, then you can go ahead and do it. But the tricky thing is to get the right guest. And everyone just looked at each other and your name came up. So that you accepted what I call as a challenge, because this metaphor is one that we say it or we're familiar with it. But when it's time to provide examples about it or how it resonates in our life, it's not as easy as you think to explain it or to find it. So how far have you got with the metaphor to carry the can?
Well, first of all, for me, carry the can is a take on you taking responsibility for a mistake or a misdeed. In other words, you're blamed for something bad that has happened, even though you're not the only person who might be and have been responsible for it. So that's my understanding of carry the can ever since one was growing up. So as a child, a classic example for me as a child, I have to say, when I was growing up in Whitehall, St. Thomas, Jamaica, although I'm British born, I grew up in the Caribbean, I was my grandmother's favorite grandson. So there were other children in the household, and if a glass got broken or anything had happened, they would put me up front because my grandmother, and I laugh now, but my grandmother spoiled me to the extent where she wouldn't beat me. So they would say, show ownership, put your hand up, carry the can for us, so to speak, because, and I would do it knowing full well, and they knew full well, my cousins and others within the household, all of my age group, knew full well that I wouldn't be beaten by my grandmother. I was her favorite one. That's a different sort of take on it. Yes, I would own up, I'd accept responsibility that I was the one, even though I was actually telling porkies. I probably didn't have anything to do with the breaking of the glass or the mirror or what it was that was cause for concern. But so that's one example. Another example I can give was when I was at high school, we were in a musical appreciation class and I was behaving well, but some of the other students in the class weren't behaving well. It was a class where they were supposed to listen to classical music. This is going back into the 70s now at high school. And they were throwing things about and the teacher got very upset with them all and decided, right, everybody will be getting a detention. And I just, this is so unfair. Here I am, because I've always loved classical music, which is why probably our daughter, Abigail Kelly, in case you didn't know, is an opera singer. She sings all over the world. And people say, Tony, she gets that from you. but I wasn't pleased that I had to, in a sense, carry the can in that regard. That's one angle where the whole class was punished accordingly. So the good suffered for the bad, so to speak. And that didn't go down too well with me. I did the detention like the others did, but yes. Just felt that that was a bad mark against my name for something that I wasn't really involved with. But the whole issue of carrying the can, where people do rightly or wrongly take ownership for somebody else's mistakes or misdeeds or misdemeanors, it needs to be carefully thought of, because I worked in the criminal justice system and I've known of people who have gotten involved in crime, in criminal behavior, offending behavior, and the police come around and asking questions and so on, and they had nothing to do with it. I remember having to write reports on people who, they call them pre-sentence reports, which have to go before the magistrates in the magistrates court or the judge in the Crown Court. And the person that I'm there interviewing them, look at offending behavior, looking at risk assessment and so on. And the person would say to me, you know, I didn't do this. And I would say, well, why did you plead guilty to something you did not do? Oh, and sometimes I would say, it's true, there's pressure from their peers, pressure from whoever they were in the offending behavior with. Or sometimes it also was pressure from the legal advisor, the solicitor, or the barrister saying, hey, you have such a bad record. And if you were to go to trial, trying to convince, if you were to go to trial, you're not going to be believed. So you might as well put your hand up, own up to it. And for me, that is wrong, which is why I'm totally opposed. And this can come in the conversation. I'm totally opposed to the death sentence. Absolutely opposed to it, because innocent people can end up going to the gallows, having been put under pressure by whoever, whether by their legal team or whether being bullied under cross-examination in the police station by the police saying, you better own up to this. And then they put their hand up and own up. So one needs to be mindful about carrying the can. Is it a serious thing you've done or not done? If it's a misdemeanor, something petty or so on, and you put your hand up, I don't have a problem with that. But when it's something that can impact and affect the rest of your life in terms of getting a criminal record, in terms of you being locked away for how many years, or in some countries even facing the death penalty, it takes on a different meaning altogether. And people need to be mindful of that. And then also, there's some people who carry the can who are not bright. They're not that au fait or bright or astute enough to know, hey, I really shouldn't own up to something which I didn't actually do. But pressure and being forced and being coerced and being bullied can make the difference between whether you own up to doing something which you actually did do or something that you didn't do. So that's another angle. I don't know if the colleagues who were wanting us to discuss this, whether they were thinking along those lines, but that for me is a worry, where people are carrying the can for things. And there are people now in prisons up and down the country and abroad who are doing time for things that they didn't actually do. And I go back to the persons who come before me for me to write the pre-sentence report. And I say, well, I think you need to change your guilty plea. But they say, oh, it's too late. I've already put my hands up to it. They've asked for a report about me and I've come to you. So when you look at the issue of what's their attitude, are they showing remorse, contrition? What's their attitude to their offending behavior? It's hard to really gauge it because they're telling you, I sometimes wonder, are they pulling wool over my eyes by saying, I really didn't do this? Or the police stitched me up? Or somebody planted evidence. And you know, as Black people as well, we need to be mindful. We're going through the death of this chap in London who initially what they said was that when they were chasing him and then they found a gun in the car, it has since been revealed there was no gun. You know, this chap in London, there was no gun in no car. So those are sort of things that you have to bear in mind when you look at the whole issue of carrying the can and whether or not it's a right or wrong thing to do. Sometimes, for quiet peace of mind, you might say, oh, yes, I'm going to put my hand up to that. But when it becomes a very serious matter, you have to decide. And this is where some solicitors, they just say, oh, yes, you have such a long record, criminal record. It's best you just own up to it. Because even if you were to go into the Crown Court to be judged by your peers, 12 people on a jury, by the time the barrister has wrapped you up around his or her little finger and twisted you, even although you didn't do it, they might find you guilty. So those things come into the equation and are things we need to be mindful of in our everyday life. As Black people out there stitched up and being charged with offences which we did not commit. I hope that helps in the discussion.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think that when we initially thought about the metaphor, I think the first thing that comes on someone is the social context in terms of you personally carrying the can somewhere along your life. And like you, my kind of early recollection of it is being the eldest of four children and knowing
up with that, you.
Yes, and my father always used to say, you're the eldest, you must set the example.
You should know better.
I should know better. So sometimes if my father would think that I am the one who did something, there will be times when I would have to think, well, I've only got one brother and two sisters. And I had a sister who's very feisty, who, poor thing, she would be the one carrying the can. Because sometimes I would say, do you know what? I'm not going to take responsibility of this one. I didn't do it.
Yes.
And whether it was her or not, I would say it was her because she had the mouth on her.
So she could get herself out of trouble then.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. Talk herself out of trouble.
She's like that. You know, her personality is, if she didn't do it, she'd be adamant. But she would also say, well, if I didn't do it, if it's one of my siblings who did it, there must be a reason why they did it. And she would twist it to make my parents think about their behavior or what they probably did contribute to the sibling doing what they did. If that makes any sense to you.
Yes, it does. So there's some sibling rivalry there, but there's also love for each other. You were clearly brought up in a family where there is protection and love for your younger siblings and so on. And then they also reciprocated as and when necessary. So you didn't carry the can for everything going. And why should you?
Yes. Yeah, but you do these things as children. And, you know, my personality, I don't think really grew itself to be what it was until I was in my mid-30s, you know, which many people would think, what? But the way that I was brought up, you know,
introverted.
Yes. And my parents are always right. Do as you're told. You're the elder. Set the example. So I was always doing what was expected of me. And even when I went into relationships, I did the same thing until I was in my mid-30s and realized, wait a minute, you know, I'm doing things that, you know, satisfy other people than myself. And I was carrying the can many times for others. before I realized, you know what? Speak up.
Yes, number one, you come first. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, speak up. You don't have to carry the can, or you don't have to accept responsibility for certain things. Well, sometimes I think there's an indirect way of looking at carry the can, which is sometimes when you're not fully sure about how much you have contributed to the situation, or you have doubt as to how much you have contributed to the situation. Similar to what you're saying in terms of the legal system, sometimes it's just easier to just say, okay, then, because it's, people are prompting you to believe that sort of thing. You wasn't there at the time. If you had gone when you were told to have gone, all those kind of things, you know? So I realized that sometimes indirectly, I was carrying the can for situations because other people were feeding things. Like, well, if you had done it when you said you had done it, if you did it on the 1st instead of the 5th, then you would not have, say, for example, the penalties that come with a charge or something.
Okay. So let me ask you something then, Delia. If you were able to relive that childhood again, knowing what you know now, and even going on into up until about when you were 30, when you really started to stand up for your own and so, would you have changed anything? Or would you have still kept it just like how you
No, I would have changed. I would have changed, definitely. I started writing a book a couple of years ago, and I always remember the first sentence. And the first sentence is, took me 32 years to tell my mother no.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
And that's the first thing that comes to my mind when I'm writing a book. Then it means it's very important to me. It's the first sentence, you know? And as much as I loved my parents and love my parents, and my mom has dementia now, so I can't have that conversation with her. I've had the conversation with my dad in terms of, you know, when I was growing up and certain things and so on and so forth. You know, we just had discussions on it because in those days, the mentality was different. And a lot of families, I think, had lots of siblings. I think there are less siblings in this around now. So a lot of children would have been carrying the can for certain things, you know, throughout their lives, you know.
But with it is a cultural bit about children should be seen and not heard.
You mustn't
back answer your parents. When since you turned big woman here, I am the mother and father here. How dare you start to, I've said you did it. So you just accept responsibility, even if you don't. And you just think, you know what? I'm not going to argue with my mom and dad because I'll probably get a beating on top of that. You're out of water, you're pasty. So that's part of it as well, where you just think, you know, I'm going to be subservient. I'm going to just accept what they're saying, even though all you know, it's far removed from the truth.
You know, what you said earlier about the, you know, being opposed to the death penalty. I have thought about this myself, and my response to that is that I am not opposed to the death penalty if it is a fact and it can be proved without there are video cameras that, you know, although in this day and age people can do anything with video cameras, they put you in a place that you never been in your life, you know.
Yes,
you have to be very very careful. So I think it's a combination of the proof and video. Also, some people, they actually will say, yeah, I did it. They'll admit to it. And they'll say the reason why, revenge or, you know. But at the same time, we have to think about that person's mentality, because not everyone has mental illness. You know, and if they have got a mental issue, then is it right to do that? So so it opens up a can of worms.
It does.
Carry the can of worms.
Yes, I like the pun.
You know, as an adult, I was trying to think, how have I carried the can as an adult? And if I say this in a big way, maybe it can be narrowed down. Sometimes I think of our culture and the color of our skin. We are sometimes carrying the can for the negative intonations that come with being black.
That's a very good point.
It's sad to say, because I remember when I was growing up in the 70s in England, I would, you know, maybe go to the shop or whatever for my parents or whatever. And sometimes I would be asked, where are you from? Jamaica or Africa? That was it. It was not the Caribbean or Nigeria or Ghana or Barbados, Lucia. Where are you from? Jamaica or Africa? And then they would answer it themselves and say, oh, well, maybe you're from the Caribbean because your skin isn't as dark as African.
Yes.
You know, and if someone of my color did something wrong, then they would just assume that because that person is of my color, then my attitude or I'm going to be criminal or I'm going to be unreasonable or, you know. Yes.
It's the negative stereotypes which they then put on us in terms of aggression and we don't fit in and so on and so forth. So, yes, I like that approach that you've come there with in terms of carrying the can. I take it a stage further where I, because I worked in equity, equality, diversity and inclusion, I was always at the forefront when I was seeing racism appearing in whatever settings I was involved in. And there's some people are so intuned and they click and they say, hang on, what's happening here amounts to racism. But some people are not that on the ball and not so intuitive and so intuned and click to it straight away. So in that sense, I used to have to carry the can a lot. Anytime somebody would say something and it was deemed to be offensive or racist or insensitive, I would then jump up and say something. And then I thought, well, hang on, I'll suffer from burnout if I do that. There are other people in the room who need to be able to, so it doesn't become, it's Delia again. Oh, it's Tony Kelly again. It's us two. They have this chip on the shoulder. And when they come with this chip on the shoulder, I say, listen, the chips from the Caribbean is banana and yam and those sort of chips. You're probably thinking potato chips. And I sort of laugh it off in that way. But yes, that's another sort of form of carrying the can where I'm constantly at the forefront. I'm thinking, well, hang on, I don't want to burn myself out at the expense of these people who have whether internalized their racism or showing it in a very introverted or extroverted manner or so on. So that, along with what you just mentioned in terms of, you know, where you're from, is another form of carrying the can. Yeah. Interesting discussion.
Yes, and there you are, you're doubting that we would be able to speak for so long on that carry the can because everyone was like,
and we covered so many areas, haven't we?
We've done that. So before I say goodbye to you, I know that you have a really long schedule of traveling ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Briefly, could you tell us what you're up to?
Well, during lockdown, Delia, I did a lot of, I work as a diabetes ambassador. This is a voluntary capacity. So I was doing webinars and Zooms in Africa and the Caribbean and the States and Canada. And two countries, which is Jamaica and Barbados, said, hey, we just love how you give the message out there to us as Black people in terms of you have diabetes, you've had it for 18 years, and you live with it without ever taking medication. Come over to Macedonia and help us. So with that in mind, they invited me to both countries. So I leave in October. The whole of November in the Caribbean is Caribbean Diabetes Month for the whole of November. So I'm in Jamaica for holidays to start with and then start hitting the ground running in 8 parishes, going into the nooks and crannies, communities and so on, enlightening people about diabetes and how to go do it the healthy way, physical activity and diet, pro-social modeling, take a leaf out of my book. And then I fly off from Jamaica on the 13th of November to Barbados, where I'm there until the 3rd of December to do likewise in Barbados. I've never been to Barbados, so I'm looking forward to that. Have you been?
Yes. So I have a family who live in Barbados as well.
Okay, well, I'll have to send you the contact, itinerary, so that you can invite them to come to one of the events I'm doing.
I will.
And speak to me and say, by the way, we're your Dolores relatives.
Yes, I will, because one of them, she's retired now, but she used to be a nurse. And she was a nurse in England, and then she went to Barbados and continued her nursing. So she'll have a lot to say about diabetes. So definitely. Well, Tony, thank you so much
for
being with us and safe travels.
Thanks, Delia. Thanks for having me on the show.
In the English language today, we use phrases like to pay for something, or in modern slang, we would say to clean up after yourself or after someone else. Now, let's take a look at the English sibling of etwas asparden müssen. To carry the can for someone. Another odd yet very different way of saying the same thing. Many believe this phrase originated from the British military. The first recorded cases are from the Royal Navy in the late 1920s. However, Eric Partridge, in his Dictionary of Historical Slang, states that it has been around since the late 19th century. In his Dictionary of Forces Slang, he writes that the idiom refers to the member of a gang or party who fetches the bear for all and then has the melancholy task of returning the empty. This is obviously a rather tedious and unpleasant task. An example of how this phrase is used today can be found in an interview with former Irish footballer Liam Brady, in which he blames Liverpool's manager Jurgen Klopp for the team's defeat.
We've been flagging it up for a while that neither goalkeeper inspire the defenders in front of them. And so many goals they've conceded have been down to bad goalkeeping, whether it's Mignolet or whether it's Karius. So ultimately, he's got to carry the can for that club. Mm-hmm. And he probably skirt over Karius' performance tonight. There's no doubt that he's got to change and get a good goalkeeper for the upcoming season or next year. Mm-hmm. I'm just sad because they couldn't show what they could do because Salah went off and because Karius had an absolute howler.
There is an older slang expression which might have served as its predecessor, to carry the keg. Keg describes a small cask that can hold various contents. It is also a dialect word and means to offend or to insult. So to carry the keg meant to hold a grudge or to be easily offended. The pun in the phrase on keg, a small cask, is that you literally might carry it as you would figuratively carry a grudge. It is possible that carry the can developed as a reference and then took on a life of its own. Kegs can also have an entirely different purpose. They are tricky and even difficult to carry, which is why some have had the idea to incorporate them into their daily workout routines.
What's up, everybody? This is Grant Higa, also known as the Higa Monster, and today we are at Barbell Brigade. Today I want to teach you a few pointers on using a keg for carrying or loading, so come check it out. So using the keg, keg's a great tool for conditioning. It's very unstable. Most kegs, they're filled with sand and water, so unlike a fixed weight, that bugger's shaking around like crazy. So when you got to pick up a load that's kind of like wobbling around inside, it's really hard to move and stuff, you know? So I really think if you add these into your training, especially after squat and deadlift days, it'll really help.
I would like to add a word of caution to the listener here. Physical exercises like this one can cause severe damage to the body when carried out incorrectly. So please do not attempt it based on an audio recording. It is important to follow visuals or consult a licensed trainer before. Taking responsibility for wrongdoings is a timeless topic that has played a role throughout the history of mankind. Whether that's personal responsibility, national responsibility, or global responsibility. In a day and age where we are all connected by means of the internet and long-distance travel, the idea of taking responsibility has taken on a new dimension. In an era of growing eco-conscience, we know that each one of us leaves behind a carbon footprint. Minimizing this footprint by using less electricity or buying sustainable and fair trade products are just a few of the ways in which we can reduce this footprint. Personal and global responsibility can overlap, as becoming more sustainable globally is directly connected to each person playing their part towards a greener future. In other instances, entire countries have had to take responsibility for their wrongdoings. One that instantly comes to mind is Germany. After starting and then losing World War I, the Treaty of Versailles made sure that Germany paid off every last damage caused by the war. In fact, it wasn't until the end of 2010, 92 years later, that the country finished paying off the debt of $269 billion. In addition to the financial price, Germany paid an even higher price in losing 3 million citizens to the war. Ironically, the Treaty of Versailles, which was a peace treaty sealed to end 4 years of violent fighting, eventually led to World War II. It is considered to be one of the most controversial agreements in history. Its cracks left open the possibility of a second global conflict and brought about an extremely fragile peace in Europe. After World War I ended, the Weimar Republic was established in Germany in 1919. The newly birthed republic suffered from many issues like hyperinflation, economic depression, and political instability. An increasing public discontentment paved the way for Adolf Hitler. Winston Churchill, in his famous speech of 1934, talked about the risk of impending war with Germany.
Many people think that the best way to escape war is to dwell upon its horrors and to imprint them vividly upon the minds of the younger generation. They flaunt the grisly photographs before their eyes. They fill their ears with tales of carnage. They dilate upon the ineptitude of generals and admirals. They denounce the crime and insensate folly of human strife. Now, all this teaching ought to be very useful in preventing us from attacking or invading any other country, if anyone outside a madhouse wished to do so. But how would it help us if we were attacked or invaded ourselves? That is the question we have to ask. Would the invaders consent to visit Lord Beaverbrook's exhibition? Or listen to the impassioned appeals of Mr. Lloyd George? Would they agree to meet that famous South African, General Smuts, and have their inferiority complex removed in friendly, reasonable debate? I doubt it. I have borne responsibility for the safety of this country in grievous times. I gravely doubt it. But even if they did, I am not so sure we should convince them and persuade them to go back quietly home. They might say, it seems to me, you are rich, we are poor, you seem well fed, we are hungry, you have been victorious, we have been defeated, you have valuable colonies, we have none, you have your navy, where is ours? You have had the past. Let us have the future. Above all, I fear, they would say, you are weak and we are strong.
The atrocities committed by the Nazi Party are countless and unimaginable. And decades after the end of World War II, its consequences are still felt by many around the world. Taking responsibility for wrongdoing like that is a complex and highly sensitive task. It is one that must be done over a long period of time by generations to come after the ones that were alive back then have long passed. In modern-day Germany, some ways of continuing to bear the responsibility are through in-depth teaching in schools, respect towards Judaism, such as the banning of jokes about Jewish people and their heritage, and ongoing financial support for survivors of the Holocaust. Of course, bearing responsibility for a deed cannot always redeem that which has been damaged or taken, but nonetheless, it is a step which must be taken to make accounting for the past possible. Etwas als Baden-Müssen, or to carry the can for something, is an ancient figure of speech that is as relevant today as it was 100 years ago. Even though an often unpleasant and tedious act, it is one of great value. Bearing responsibility for one's wrongdoing or that of another is an innately human act, which is necessary to make human coexistence possible. Thanks for listening to this episode of Metaphorically Speaking. I hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope, like me, you learned something new. Thank you to our guest, Tony Kelly. We'd love you to share the show with your friends, and please feel free to leave a review on colourful.com or on our podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, with Delia Delore, which is on Apple, Spotify and all major streaming platforms. If you'd like to suggest a metaphor for an upcoming show, you can reach us at info@metaphorically-speaking.uk. Join us for another metaphor next week. Until then, as usual,
colourful, Delia Delore on Colourful Radio.
Yo, this is strictly a dancehall hip-hop record. You heard it once in the OPP version. Now I got Beanie Man up in here. Beanie, 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 Beanie. Zaka Zow, Zika Zow, Zika Zow, Zika Zow, anyhow, Wycliffe, yeah.